We're destroying it.
Do you agree? Tell Mr. Crawford in your email to him at stand@crawfordbroadcasting.com. Tell him on what station you hear The Stand when you write to stand@crawfordbroadcasting.com. And when you want to read and print commentaries, visit The Stand page at www.crawfordbroadcasting.com. I'm Bill McCormick.
Cave Right.
The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Crawford Broadcasting Company, this station, or its sponsors.
Good morning and welcome to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg and we're live for a half hour each weekday morning. And we have open phone lines during this half hour so that you can call if you have questions about the Bible or about the Christian faith, and we can talk about them together. If you have a difference of viewpoint from the host, feel free to call. And I'd be glad to talk to you about that as well. The number is 800-227-5278. We have a few lines open right now. You can get right through 800-227-5278 if you'd like to be on the program today. It's only a half hour, so don't wait long, because it isn't long before the end of the program arrives. And just very quickly at the beginning, I'd like to make two announcements for those in the Temecula area, which is where I live in Temecula, California. On Thursday mornings, and that'd be tomorrow, we have a weekly morning Bible study on the book of Proverbs, and that's held at the Panera Bread restaurant across the street from Costco in Temecula. Panera Bread at 6:30 on Thursday mornings. You're welcome to come. It's open to the public, and we study the book of Proverbs every Thursday morning at 6:30 there, and hope that you'll consider joining us if you're an early morning person and a Bible student and live in or near Temecula. Also, if you live in or near Orange County, this Saturday night I'm speaking again on the subject of what are we to make of Israel. And we'll be talking about what the Bible teaches about the nation of Israel, about the covenants God made, and what impact that has on land claims. And I'll just say that you will, if you come to this meeting, you'll hear some things from the Bible that you don't usually hear from the Bible on this subject from Christian preachers and so forth and broadcasters. So it's important to hear everything the Bible has to say before you make up your mind about things. Maybe you've already made up your mind, but feel free to join us. And in fact, if you're of a person of an opposing view to mine, please come and bring your pastor if he's of an opposing view too. Bring as many of your lieutenants as you can, and we can have questions and answers afterwards. And I certainly am open to any challenge from any quarter, and we will look at what the Bible says. That's this Saturday night in Buena Park at the Way Fellowship. That's the information about these meetings is at our website, which is thenarrowpath.com. Go to the tab that says Announcements, and there you'll find information, maps, instructions, and so forth at thenarrowpath.com. Our first caller today is Jesse, calling from Pomona, California. Jesse, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you for accepting my call. I'm okay. I want to go to 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 1, 2, 3, and if I may read it real quickly, then I'll ask my question. Therefore, I exert, first of all, that supplications and prayers and intercessions and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and all in our authority, that we may lead a quiet, peaceable life in all goodness and reverence. For this is good and acceptable in the sight of God our Savior. No, I believe in that. I do that. But after the decision I heard yesterday from the President of the United States, I find it very hard to do that for him, because I truly believe he's put there to destroy our country. and I think he knows what he's doing. Especially what I heard yesterday. When my wife and I were together listening to what he said that he would veto anything that would come before him, I did not mince any words the way I felt about him. And I had to hang up, I had to stop myself and ask God to forgive me in the name of Jesus. Now, with that said, please give a response to that, and I'll hang up. Thank you.
Okay, Jesse. Thanks for your call. Well, it seems to me if you believe we have a president who's determined to destroy the country, that's all the more reason to pray. It doesn't say that we should pray for them to be successful in all of their enterprises, but we should pray for those in authority that the result will be we'll be able to live a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. In other words, we should pray that the rulers of our nation will preserve our freedom to live according to our consciences. Now, that is something that is definitely under attack in our present time, which gives all the more reason, I think, that praying should be done. There's not as much as we would like that we can do to change what the government is going to say and do. Obviously, as long as an increasing majority of people are out of touch with biblical values, they're going to, generally speaking, elect and support politicians who don't affirm biblical values, and in as we can see right now, who would like to stifle and gag Christians from speaking, you know, whatever they believe about things. Now, that's something that, I mean, we can put up candidates, or we can vote, or we can lobby, or we can do whatever we want to try to stop that. But many times we feel like, no, despite any efforts we might put out, this is the trend. And so what's left to us? Well, we can still do all those things, I suppose, but we'd be foolish to neglect prayer, because our freedoms and our ability to live peaceable and godly lives in reverence and godliness are definitely being challenged, and so certainly we should pray for that. Remember when Paul wrote this, that the rulers of the land he was living in were pagans. And Nero, in particular, was the emperor when Paul wrote these words and said we should pray for these leaders. He didn't say they're good leaders. He didn't say that they are leaders whose policies are something he could support. He's saying we have these leaders, and we had better pray that God will control them to the extent of preserving our freedom to live quiet and peaceable lives in all godliness and reverence. So I think what Paul's saying is, even in his day, there were fewer things that people could do in determining who would rule them, since they didn't have elections that, you know, the general public could elect the emperor or vote him out. This was out of their control completely, but not out of God's control. And, you know, Paul, therefore, lived in a time where the average citizen was much less empowered than we are to have any say in the political process, but the rulers they had were very bad. The one he was writing about, Nero, actually killed him after this point. And so it's a bad government in many cases that persecutes Christians, but we should pray for the prolongation of our freedom and of our liberty to do what we're doing as Christians. The time may come where we don't have that liberty anymore. Certainly we are not exactly entitled to it more than other people are, although we have enjoyed it more than most other people have for the last few centuries. So there's certainly a reason to be praying. Sandy from San Jose, California. Welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Steve. I had a different question, but I want to sort of jump on, sort of ask another question regarding a similar subject that, you know, with all that's going on in government. So this is my newer question. Isn't, you know, when things are going bad in a nation, doesn't the Bible say that judgment comes to the household of faith first? And the reason I say that, and I mean, I can point my finger at Christians and I can certainly point it back at me, but when I look back at the Old Testament, it seems that God was upset with ruling leaders, and he definitely punished those. But it seemed like an underlying theme that was through a lot of the judgment in the Old Testament was the Israelis or the Israel nation neglecting the poor, neglecting the widows, the orphans. That seemed to be quite an underlying theme in that. I mean, Sodom and Gomorrah had their issues too, but also they were also judged because they didn't take care of the poor and the hurting. So my question is, when we as Christians are looking out there pointing at government, shouldn't we be pointing our fingers back to ourselves in the sense that, and I've heard a more latest statistic, that if only one-third of every church in the United States would adopt one child, there'd be no foster care. If we did that, wouldn't we be making a bigger statement than, you know, all the things that we could throw stones at the secular world on? That's my question. It's not a condemnation, but it's, I mean, I look around and I see all the orphans and the widows, and what are we doing for these people, you know? And so give me your thoughts on that, Steve.
Well, when we say, what are we doing for these people, I don't know if that's meant to be rhetorical.
Well, no, so specifically,
let me reframe that by some Christians. Well,
let me just reframe that.
Sandy, let me just say this. I understand what you're saying.
You
mentioned that, you know, if you point the finger at someone, there's four pointing back at you. That is often the case, but not always. I mean, there are, in fact, Christians who have been very involved in helping the poor and making sacrifices and speaking up for the powerless and for the victims and so forth. I mean, there's lots of Christian organizations out there trying to save the unborn, trying to help the victims of human trafficking and so forth. Huge number of organizations run by Christians who are very involved, making sacrifices and so forth. So it is true, while it is true that many Christians are not involved in any particular service for Christ, there are people who are doing all they know to do and probably all they should do, probably all they can do. So, I mean, your challenge would fit a large number of people, but not all. I mean, some people, if you say, well, what are you doing? They might be able to give you a long list, which would make your head spin of all that they're doing, and it would be good, you know. But there are certainly people who are just sitting on their hands and doing nothing, and that would be the ones who would, I think, fall into your criticism.
But, and I saw the Dropbox this weekend, and I guess that's where sort of this conviction came from. And knowing that if one-third of every church would adopt one child, one-third of every church in the U.S. would adopt a child, there'd be no foster care. So doesn't that mean that a lot of people that are going to church, and based on Barna's research, said only 9% of those that call themselves Christians would pass a test? Doesn't that mean that we're really not walking in faith as a nation? I mean, we're only a small remnant, and that was also true of Israel. Am I making sense there? In other words,
Barna's research showed that only 9% of the people who call themselves evangelicals actually believe Christian doctrines, which of course puts a quantitative figure on what many of us have been saying without the statistics for a long time, and that is that most people in churches aren't saved, aren't Christian people,
and we shouldn't
assume we're fellowshipping with Christians when we're at church. We might be, but we might not be at all.
Okay. Well, I'll let it go at that. I'll call back another time with my other question and appreciate your help, Steve.
Okay, Sandy. I understand your frustration. God bless you.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye now. All right. Our next caller is going to be Chuck from Fallbrook, California. We also have a line open for you if you'd like to call. You're listening to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg, and you can call with questions about the Bible or the Christian faith or to disagree with the host if you want to. The number is 800-227-5278. That's 800-227-5278. Chuck, welcome to the Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Steve. I'm a little emotional. It's hard to talk to you, but I'm studying your book on the Revelation, your latest edition, and the $10 words leave me a little upset sometimes, but I'm working my way through it. But my question is, since the establishment of Israel in 48, which is considered by many to be prophetic, and God has promised the land to Israel, but he didn't promise a barren land destroyed by a nuclear bomb. I wonder if you have an opinion about whether God would allow a nuclear bomb to destroy Israel, regardless of their retaliatory strike capability, would he allow that land and this people to be destroyed?
Well, you know, I don't know what God will allow and what he won't allow. There are many people who believe that the Bible prophesies a perpetual security of Israel in their land, although the same people who say that believe that the Antichrist is going to come to power and will kill two-thirds of all the inhabitants of Israel, that is, all the Jews. The dispensationalists that I read believe that all the Jews are going to return to Israel, to the land, and after that the Antichrist is going to come and kill two-thirds of them. I don't hold to that view myself. I don't. The verses they use, and I know those verses because I used to be a dispensationalist, I don't think those verses are talking about that at all. And most Christians, including most Christian teachers, have never heard any alternative view. They've just been taught by their teachers and who were taught by their teachers and so forth. So certain traditions and traditional understandings of subjects get passed down through the generations. And therefore, there's a whole host of teachers, broadcasters, pastors, and so forth, who would say that Israel is, of course, going to be restored in the last days, but then, of course, they're going to be wiped out, two-thirds of them. I'm not sure if that would count as the destruction of Israel. Now, they don't believe that the Antichrist is going to use a nuclear bomb, but, you know, it's possible that a nuclear bomb would wipe out two-thirds of the population, and that would be comparable to what dispensationalists believe the Antichrist is going to do. Now, I don't have the same conviction you do about the role that the promised land plays in the end times. And for that reason, I can't tell whether God would allow Iran, I think probably you're thinking of Iran, to develop a nuclear bomb and to bomb Israel. I would hope not. I would hope that there would be no nuclear bombs in the hands of rogue states, whether Israel is targeted or any other nation. I would be equally alarmed if somebody was directing an attempt to drop a bomb on the Kurds or on the or on South Korea or on America. You know, I mean, to me, it would be equally criminal and equally horrible to know of that happening. But whether that will happen or not, I cannot say. We know that chemical weapons were used on the Kurds by Saddam Hussein. We don't know if anyone will ever use chemical weapons on people in Israel or anywhere else in the world, particularly. I would hope not. I would hope that no one would ever use such weapons against any people. And it's my opinion. I don't really know the people who run the nation of Israel, but my opinion is that they would like it very much if they could be left alone and just be a peaceful land. Now, I have friends who tell me that's not what their plan is, and I know some very anti-Israel people who tell me that Israel's not a peaceful nation, but I don't know. All I claim is ignorance. All I can say is I hope that they can be left alone, and I hope that everyone else can be left alone. I would like to see no war. I would certainly like to see no nuclear bombs blow up anywhere. But as far as whether God would allow it or not, I don't know. God has allowed a great number of things to happen historically, and what he may allow to happen in the future, I can't really say, because the Bible doesn't say. The Bible doesn't tell us anything about nuclear bombs or whether one will ever be dropped in the land of Israel. So I'm afraid I can't help you with that. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, I've got you, and I'm studying your book on Revelation. Can you define for me dispensationalism?
Yes, dispensationalism. Dispensationalism is a theological system that arose in the 1830s. The founder was a man named John Nelson Darby, and he was the first, he was the first influential person in the Christian Church to indicate that that the Jews, despite the fact that they reject Christ and Christianity, that they are still God's chosen people, and that he's going to
restore their nation in the end times, and you know, that all the end times events are going to be somehow focused upon the land of Israel. That's something that most of us have heard from popular teachers, but it wasn't really taught in the church until about 1830. So that's what dispensationalism is.
And your position on that is?
I'm a former dispensationalist. I was raised as a dispensationalist, and I taught it for many years myself, but I no longer hold that view. I hold a view considerably more in sync with what the church believed the Bible said for the first 1,800 years.
Which partially explains your answer in that you are about the destruction of Israel. Is it maybe yes, maybe no, sort of?
Right.
Okay.
Yes, that would explain my answer. Yeah, my answer is I don't really know what may happen in Israel in the future, because I don't believe the Bible really talks about the future of Israel.
Well, I thank you very much, Steve. I really love your wisdom you put into difficult questions. Thank you very much.
Chuck, I appreciate your call, and I can tell you're quite emotional about that subject. We've had a couple of calls by people who were pretty emotional about their questions. That's not always the case, but I appreciate the fact that we're hearing from heartfelt inquiries rather than just, you know, what should we say, academic things. I mean, this is one reason I would really urge anyone who's never heard what the church taught for the first 1,800 years about Israel to come on out. Come on out to Buena Park this Saturday night. I'm teaching on what do we make of Israel. We'll be talking exactly about what the church has always taught until the 1800s. And we'll look at the scriptures. We're not going to be looking at, you know, we're not going to be quoting, you know, church fathers and things like that. We're going to be looking at what the Bible itself says. So instead of focusing on what church fathers said and what the church said throughout history, we'll be focusing on the biblical reasons why they said what they did, which is something that if you're ignorant of, it'd be very valuable to you at least to be acquainted with. Otherwise, we'd live kind of in a provincial bubble where we only hear what is popular to be heard in our own time. Okay, let's talk to Kathleen from San Clemente, California. Kathleen, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you. I may have missed it, but in the last few days here and there, you were talking about, you know, electing and our leaders and stuff like that. And I've never heard anybody bring up, because the first thing that always comes into my mind is in the towards the end of Daniel, where he talks about God sets up over them the basest of men.
Yeah,
which
that's
seems
chapter 4
to be
Daniel, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was... Anyways, it just seems to be so true.
Yeah, that's very often the case. Well, in Daniel chapter 2, it specifically says that God, sets up kings and he brings down kings.
Right.
And in chapter 4 of Daniel, it says that he sets over men, sometimes the basest of
right.
men. Yeah, so, I mean... We certainly have seen that to be true in modern times in many cases.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you have to go back quite a ways, you know, like Abraham Lincoln and whatever, to find somebody with any kind of morals.
Well, I'm sure there have been some good ones since the time of Lincoln, but you're right. It does seem like...
Here and there.
Well, everyone who rises to positions of power... I won't say everyone because I don't like to make irresponsible generalities. But for the most part, people who rise to positions of power do so through corrupt means. Or if they do not, once they have come to power, they often are corrupted by the power and by the pressures of the office.
Right. Power corrupts.
Mm.
It's very one of those things, I think, in human nature, no matter where your power's at, it can be very difficult to use it, you know, even if you start out as a Christian or, you know, wanting to do right. It's a
constant battle. And that's why it's so wrong-headed for people, and Christians should know better. It's so wrong-headed for people to think that politicians are going to give us a better world. politicians are mostly lawyers. I don't know why it is that lawyers are among the most despised profession in America, and yet we elect them to be officers over us to make all our moral decisions for us, and suddenly we feel like we're supposed to trust them. I don't really understand that, but
that the Bible says that, you know, it's not good for men to put their trust in princes, that is, in rulers.
No.
Because, frankly, human beings are corrupt and corruptible.
Evil. Yeah. Well, I think the more, you know, as somebody who tries to follow God and whatever, the longer you go, the more you realize how evil you are, you know, and looking back in your life and that. And I know the better I know myself, the more I distrust other people, I mean. Not, mm-hmm. But just realizing where we come from as human beings.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people, not only a lot of people, virtually every human being decries Adolf Hitler. You know, when you think of, you know, when you're trying to think of the quintessential evil person of modern times, it's Adolf Hitler that always comes first to mind. And he was a very evil person. There's no question about that. But many people don't understand, or and they never will know, what they would have done if
really?
They were in his position. You know,
if
my prejudices and my attitudes were given full vent by total and absolute political power, that I could run a whole nation and do whatever I wanted, you know, how much would that corrupt me?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But you know, Hitler had one of the most horrific, horrific, abusive childhoods you would ever want to describe or think about.
Well, I've heard that, yeah.
So you come with that and then come into the thing of power and, you know, you put all that together. Who of us might not have done the same? You know.
Well, right. And I'm not trying to diminish the evil
right.
of what Hitler has done. What I'm saying is none of us who are listening to me right now, none of us have been in the position he was in. And all of our evils, and we all have some, and some people have a great number, all of the evils in us would be given free and unchallenged vent through political power. I mean, I wonder how many people who decry Hitler would do the same thing to Christians that he did to the Jews if their prejudices against Christianity were given the full political power that he had. You see, I believe there's a lot of people in public office now who would love to do to Christians what Hitler did to the Jews. Round them up, put them in cages, you know, put them in, maybe even in ovens. You never know. I mean, there's people who would love to get rid of Christianity, but in our country, at this point, they don't have that kind of power. You know, we don't have a dictatorship here, not yet. And because of that, it's hard to say that, you know, a government official today who isn't doing what Hitler did wouldn't if they could. We just don't know. All I can say is people are corrupt. And when you give people too much power, it tends to corrupt them even more, which is a very bad thing. And there are very few government officials who are in no sense corrupted, therefore. You've been listening to The Narrow Path. My name is Steve Gregg. We are a listener-supported ministry. If you'd like to help us stay on the air, you can write to The Narrow Path, P.O. Box 1730, Temecula, California, 92593. Or you can go to our website. You can donate from there or just take stuff for free. All our research. At thenarrowpath.com. Thanks for joining us. Let's talk again tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of KBRT, its ownership, its management, or its sponsors.
It is 9:59 and you were just listening to The Narrow Path with Steve Gregg. Check out his website, thenarrowpath.com. If it is on your heart to give to this ministry, that's how he stays on the air. You can give directly online or you can give a gift through the mail, but all information is on his website, thenarrowpath.com. That's thenarrowpath.com. Coming up next is Enjoying Everyday Life with Joyce Meyer. Stay right here.
Find screened, recommended businesses that bring something different and better to the products and services you're looking for. Go to KBRT740.com and check out the KBRIGHT Business Directory for the best in the business.
The Bible is help for life. Are you fighting temptation? Look at the encouragement for victory found in 1 Corinthians 10:12 and 13.
Orange County's Christian Voice, KBRT and KBRT HD Costa Mesa and KNSN San Diego. Also on the web at KBRT740.com.
Welcome to Enjoying Everyday Life with New York Times bestselling author Joyce Meyer.
On today's program, Joyce will be teaching from her series entitled, Are You Resisting or Assisting the Devil? So, are you resisting or assisting the devil? You may have never been asked that question before, and in reality, no one ever really wants to assist the devil in anything. But depending on your attitude and how you handle the difficulties Satan throws at you, it can hinder your spiritual walk. The devil is always looking for ways to steal your joy and separate you from your relationship with Jesus. It's up to you then to decide whether you'll be defeated by Satan or stand against him in the authority given to you by Christ. On today's program, Joyce wants to encourage you on just how you can recognize that authority and how you can be ready to resist Satan and his attacks. Now, here's Joyce with today's teaching, Are You Resisting or Assisting the Devil?
Now, let's look at Ezekiel chapter 28, beginning in verse 13. You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering, the carnelian, the topaz, the jasper, the chrysolite, the beryl, the onyx, sapphires, carbuncles, and emeralds. Now, he was covered with all these jewels. And your settings and your sockets, another translation says your tabrets and your pipes, which are actually musical instruments, and in